In Waukesha, Wisconsin, last night, a candlelight vigil as the members of that stricken community remember the victims in this case, the five individuals, one an 81-year-old man, the rest women, two of them in their 50s, two of them in their 70s, this so-called grannies group that was marching and celebrating the holidays in that parade. There will be charges announced. We believe that will be about 3 p.m. Detroit time this afternoon. We imagine that they will be seeking five counts of intentional homicide against Daryl Brooks, what appears to be a career criminal who was released early on bond. His bond had been reduced after trying to run over another woman, an acquaintance of his, just a few weeks earlier. Todd Flood is a former prosecutor, now criminal defense attorney with Flood Law, and Todd joins us live here on the Paul W. Smith. So, Todd, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Guy. How are you?
I'm good. So, you know, we've got the video. We've seen the video. In some places, he appears to ram directly into these people. In other instances, he tries to weave around them. How do they prove intent in this case?
Intent can be shown by the act. We call it the mens rea, the guilty mind, if you will. I'd like to tell jurors, when you're trying to determine intent or premeditation, think about the time it takes for you to make a decision of going through the yellow light. When you were driving and it turned green and you have to make a decision of whether or not to brake or go for it, that's all the time you need to form the intent to create that act that this defendant did. And clearly, his past acts, his prior acts, will come into play as well. Those prior bad acts of, you know, the similar nature and his lack of mistake, and to show that he has this propensity and motive to do these types of things, will definitely be something that is brought in on the this case, the current case, I would imagine.
We often
does. Almost identical.
Yeah, we often see, though, defense attorneys try to render those past acts inadmissible. Because of the context here, you don't think that that will be successful?
I don't, because usually defense attorneys want to keep those things out because they're so prejudicial. All evidence is prejudicial for the most part, but they want to keep it out because they want to separate it and make it an isolated incident. However, here, we think about the acronym MIMIC, motive, identity, lack of mistake, common scheme and plan. Here, this is obviously to show this is no lack of mistake. It wasn't an accident. And so he was doing this with intent. So we can bring in those prior bad acts when you can show that the common scheme and plan, or show that this was not a mistake type deal. Otherwise, the defense attorney does have an argument to keep it out. But here, it's just, you know, water's wet. This man was doing these acts prior to, and obviously did it again.
Well, and perhaps you can't prove intent about the first person that you hit, but after you've plowed over more than 40 people, at some point there, you had the ability to reflect and say, I'm endangering others, I need to stop. And that did not occur. When you look at this bail hearing that was held, he was in on a $10,000 bail for trying to run over a female acquaintance at a gas station a couple of weeks earlier. The bond was originally set, I think, at $10,000. What would have caused them, and I know that this calls for some speculation, but in most cases, why would that bond ever be revisited?
So, that's a very good question. And the bigger question, where was the prosecutor at the time that the bond hearing was going on? The fact of the matter is that the judge, whoever made that decision on bringing the bond down to whatever it was, low enough for him to get out, obviously did not have a psych eval or did not have all of the material that was in front of him that should have been in front of him. The act of using your car, a deadly weapon, to intentionally go after or put someone in great risk of great bodily harm or death, is one of those bonds where you make sure that he's tethered or he is in a position where he's got a watchful eye over him. And the severity of the case, that's what we look at. That's what people look at when they make bonds, make bond decisions, is what's the safety to society? What's the likelihood that he may cause harm again? The second prong is, what's the likelihood of him returning back to the court? Well, he doesn't get past the first prong of what's the likelihood of him doing some dangerous act. So I can't imagine a prosecutor would have acquiesced to this bond. And the scary part about it is courts, district courts, are so busy right now with cases and the backlog of cases. It probably, you know, was one of those that got swept under, and the judge or the magistrate didn't take a careful look at what had happened here and what the victim of that case had to say. Was there a victim impact statement made at the time of the arrest? So all of those things, it just baffles your mind. And then the sad part about it is there's cases where people should get a bond, where people don't have a propensity for a bad act, or do have people around them that they can live with and keep a watchful eye. Some of those people don't get bonds. So there's no rhyme and reason oftentimes, but in this particular case, he should have never been out.
Well, it sounds like the DA is intent on getting to the bottom of it. Very quickly before we let you go, closing arguments will resume, and we presume, conclude, the jury should get the case in the Ahmaud Arbery case down in Georgia. We see once again a self-defense ploy here, a self-defense case being put forward by the defendants, saying that Ahmaud Arbery lunged for the gun. There's apparently some evidence for that. But the prosecution is saying, look, who brought the shotgun to this party, especially in the absence of any hard evidence that a crime had actually been committed? Just put that into context for us, and whether or not Ahmaud Arbery could also have been acting in self-defense after they chased him down and threatened him with a weapon.
Well, first, the prosecution in this case, for what I have seen, she has done a fabulous job. She has really, when you compare the prosecution in the Wisconsin case compared to what's happening in Georgia, she's just done an outstanding job. The fact that she's doing her rebuttal argument today and self-defense, Guy, as I explained to you before and your listeners, self-defense is as it appears to the person that's acting allegedly in self-defense, as it appears to him at the time. In this particular situation, it isn't a reasonable defense. It's a defense. It's just not a good one. When you look at the acts of the defendants of chasing this man down, armed with no evidence, and obviously race comes into play here, but there is no evidence of the victim in this case doing a previous crime. They didn't like him for that particular area, and they chased him down and wanted to detain him. They brought guns to this fight. Their decisions and their choices were so clear-cut that they were going to do obviously bad things. And self-defense, I think it's an unreasonable call for the jury to come back with a not guilty verdict on that claim. That's my thoughts from what I see, and very impressed with the prosecutor.
Todd, thanks so much. Enjoy your holiday, and we'll be watching along with you.
You too, my friend. Thank you so much for having me.
Todd Flood, we'll be back.